You're listening to the Art of Parenting podcast. I'm your host, Jeanne-Marie Pennell. Welcome and thank you for joining me. I created this podcast along with everything I do at yourparentingmentor.com to support and inspire you to be the best parent you can be. I know for a fact and from experience that parenting was never meant to be done alone. From conception to preschool, my mission is to give you the tools, strategies, and knowledge to embrace and elevate your parenting experience. I'm dedicated to supporting, inspiring, and guiding you to nurture your child's immense potential with as much joy and ease as humanly possible. Make sure to take time to check out all of the resources I have gathered for you in the show notes, as well as on my website, yourparentingmentor.com. And be sure to get on my email list so you do not miss a single episode and other products and events I curate specifically for you. And please do not hesitate to reach out if you have any questions, concerns, or feedback. A warm welcome to you, and thanks for tuning in. Hello and welcome back to The Art of Parenting. This is your host, Jeanne-Marie Pennell, and today I have Forrest Bronson with me to talk about how technology impacts our lives and, of course, more specifically, our children's lives and how we can navigate all of this. So, Forrest, thank you so much for being here and sharing your wisdom with us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited for the conversation.
So as I always like to start, I like to have my guests define what the art of parenting means to them.
Oh, that's a great question. You know, and my lens is mostly on the tech side. How does tech impact parenting? And, you know, I would say that the art of parenting is really being nimble to navigate an ever-changing world. And in many cases, that's technology, but ultimately, you know, being nimble and adapting, not locking into, you know, too many set ways, because it might be different tomorrow in terms of data that's out and research that we could use to improve how we parent.
Perfect. And our children also come with a very different set of data as well, right? So
every kid's different.
Exactly. So thank you. And before we get started, I would love for you to share a little bit about your background and how you came to do the work that you're doing today.
Yeah, so my main focus right now is Camp Light, and we're a community for parents to help navigate raising kids with tech. And I'm on the board of Digital Detox. And Digital Detox started as a very experiential live event company, summer camps for adults and Digital Detox retreats. And, you know, we've since grown into a lot of data. We do assessments with schools and students and parents around the world. We have partners in over 90 countries. And, you know, a lot of what we do is travel the world to understand how technology does impact our lives. So my personal role, I am a huge world traveler. I do a lot of data analysis. I work with a lot of parents one-on-one, and then I help lead efforts at both Digital Detox and Camp Light to hopefully help make the world a little bit more present. And, you know, I'm not anti-tech. The company is not anti-tech, but we're reaching this fever pitch where it's impacting us in some pretty profound ways. And we need to be very aware of that so we could save society and save the kids, if you will.
Definitely. Thank you for that. And thank you for your work. For me, it's so important. I know when you reached out to me when I saw, you know, Digital Detox impacting our children, I said, yes, I need to talk to Forrest, because for me, so I'm going to age myself, but I think I'm an older parent than you are, than most parents here. I have young adult children, and I have seen kind of the evolution of technology in our parenting, right? I went through parenting little children, teenagers without technology. Really, our first phone came into our house when my eldest went off to high school. And that's when I discovered the phone, when she discovered the phone. And we've been, you know, navigating that. But today, that's very different, right? Because those young adults are having children and so forth. So what have you discovered with your research and data analysis? What are, like, maybe two or three of the most important impacts, whether they're positive or negative, but the impacts that they're having on our parenting, most importantly?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, my kids are younger. They're fourth grade and first grade. I grew up in a time when I went to high school, we didn't really have, it was pre-smartphone. I graduated in 2001. And it was just a different time. So navigating school, yeah, you still had challenges as a kid. Parents have always had challenges raising kids. I think what's unique about technology is it's so ever-changing, right? You know, and it impacts every single age group. So pretty much from birth until out of high school, parents are having to wrangle this, everything from screen time to learning apps to ed tech to when to get a phone, social media, bullying, porn, AI, everything in between. So I can't think of too many great examples in history where there's been something so defining that's going to impact you as a parent and your children from birth through high school, and something that changes literally every single day. There's a new technology, there's a new innovation, there's a new lawsuit, there's a new research study. So it's just profound on how widespread it is. In terms of your question on, you know, what is the biggest impact, that's tricky. And I think we'd have to look at, you know, a certain age group. If we're looking at middle school to high school, for sure, social media is just wreaking havoc on so many teens' lives, and happy to elaborate on how it's doing that. I think from a parenting perspective, it starts a little bit younger. You know, in elementary school, it's this constant question of when do they get a phone? When do they get social media? How much screen time is okay? You know, are these learning apps actually helping and augmenting the learning experience, or are they potentially holding them back? A lot of this we have some good data on, a lot we don't. And, you know, it's still so early. And I think that's what makes it challenging for parents. And I think the other element that makes it extremely challenging for parents is the social pressure side. And many communities are not in lockstep. So you might have, you know, one parent group that, you know, have certain kind of rules and approaches to how they're going to govern technology in the household. And then other kids in the classroom that have completely different protocols. And that's when it gets really complicated, when you're trying to approach it in a certain way, and then the best friend of your kid all of a sudden gets a phone or gets Snapchat. And then it's this constant push and pull. So that was a long-winded answer of it's complicated from when you're born to when you're out of high school, and happy to double click on any of those age groups to dial in more.
No, thank you for that. And it is very complex to me. It seems that it is such a personal way of navigating, but I guess I'm also concerned that, you know, when you say like the whole social pressure, I know for the parents that I work with and such, I just try to remind people that it is our choice, our ultimate choice, right? What our values are in our homes and what we bring into the house. And I'll just, you know, share a personal anecdote from my parenting is I very early on decided that I did not want television in my home, that I didn't want screens. So this is before the smartphone. So this is just really, you know, screens. I didn't want to have that, I guess that conflict, it seems like it becomes over time. So, you know, I raised my children very kind of tech free. And I remember, you know, my second, a boy, was very kind of upset that all his friends had video games and the latest, you know, greatest technology that was coming out. And I had ultimately decided that my family values were to not invest in those technologies, that I would rather invest in travel. And I've traveled the world with my children, and very happy I did. And I think they thank me for it today. But it's true that it was hard navigating that at the time. So how do we help parents just own their beliefs? Like, can we share with them some specific data that is going to help them make informed decisions about whether to, you know, invest in technology for their children or not?
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point, we work with a lot of parents that are similar to what you describe. You know, they're going to be, you know, very, very kind of firm in their convictions and kind of hold steady with that. Unfortunately, most parents, at least that we work with across our data sets, don't. They might have good intentions early on, but eventually they'll reach a breaking point. And, you know, it gets tricky. Once you get into that sixth, seventh grade in terms of, you know, when to get a phone, and there might be three friends that have it. And then all of a sudden, if you're the one of 200 kids in your school that doesn't have a phone, that's really difficult for many parents to kind of stick with, we're not going to get this for this reason and why. That note though, like one question that many parents ask is what age is appropriate to get a phone? And we feel that's not the right question to ask. It's impossible to give a blanket answer of sixth grade or ninth grade or 12th grade. It's so dependent on the individual child, the family, what they want to do with the phone, and then also, you know, how like-minded the community is. So to your question on what can parents do, one thing we strongly recommend is having these conversations at an early age, not only with your kids on, you know, what your family values are, but also with your community. And that might be your school. It might be a small group of friends. Because that's where we usually see the some of the biggest conflict is when parents aren't in accord on what they're going to do. And all of a sudden they get to seventh, eighth grade and it's the Wild West. Whereas if you start that conversation, you know, first, second, third grade, and you have your group of friends or you have your school and it's like, look, here's what we want to do as well and why as a community, that makes it much more effective, at least we found with you know, hundreds of communities, if you have that support from other parents as well. So it's really aligning as a community with, you know, how do we want to deal and how do we want to approach this? That said, I think one, I won't call it a mistake, but I think one challenge that many parents have is they, in terms of phones and tech, and once we get into high school, ChatGPT and AI, they kind of put a complete block on all of it out of fear of the unknown. And in some ways that might hold kids back as well. So, you know, last year we probably worked with 300 high schools in the United States. And one of the top questions that high schools would come back with is, how do we block ChatGPT? How do we deal with this? Because kids are coming in with papers, you know, what should the penalties be? I think that's the wrong approach. I think we should be asking the question, are there any good uses of chat? And maybe there's not, but we need to be asking the question, something that's so prevalent in our lives and in our children's lives, is there a way that we could use this in a positive way? And so, you know, with CampLite, those are the questions we ask. How can we leverage tech in a smart way that enhances our lives and adds value? And which ways does it really detriment and that we need to be really concerned with? And then help navigate from there. So it's complicated. You know, there's not a one size fits all. It's going to depend on the individual child and the individual family, on the community, on the specific school system. There's a lot of variables that come into play. But hopefully that was helpful at a 50,000 foot view.
No, it is. It is. And I'm also, you know, hearing that it's, for me, it seems like it's always the fear of the unknown, right? Of we don't know what the progress is, or we're afraid of what it might do, especially with this example that you gave about ChatGPT, which I hadn't even thought of. And it's true how I could see that becoming problematic in high school and such. And so in your conversations with schools, are you involving the students themselves in these conversations to try to find what are the solutions? Like what are they saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we have one of the largest data sets of student sentiment. So we have the DORA score for adults, and we have a student DORA that's taken through schools. And so it's pretty much a tech impacts survey. And then we work a lot with focus groups and one-on-one with students. So that's a great question. It's a common theme that students, and so this is going to be generalized a little bit more to high school, they say is that my parents really have no idea what I'm doing online. They're just oblivious, right? They don't know who I'm following. They don't know who my influences are. They don't know how Snapchat works, right? So that's one. Two, I think a common theme that kids feel is that they don't feel heard, right? And so parents, you know, naturally are going into protective mode of there's these dangers of social media, which there are. Happy to talk about those. You know, there's these dangers of overscreen use and tech taking over our lives, but they're not acknowledging the positives and how it potentially connects them with new learning and how it connects them with people that they never would have been connected to in a positive way. And so the overall theme that we hear is that kids overwhelmingly don't feel heard from adults. And that's not new to this era. I think that's always been the case.
I was going to say, yes, I think that's that age group for sure.
One of the biggest concerns that we find that high schoolers aren't aware of is a lot of the negative influences. So most high schoolers, they're going to turn to TikTok or some still on Instagram for how they learn about the world. And they put so much trust into some of these influencers that may have millions of followers and may on paper seem credible, but they really have no expertise. So for example, you have a lot of nutrition influencers that are influencing kids that have zero background in nutritional biochemistry and are not qualified to make any recommendation on the topic, yet kids will just follow that as the truth, as the source of truth. And so I think that's one thing that a lot of parents don't understand is the kids are learning so much from TikTok, from YouTube, from these sources. And, you know, their parents are, you know, concerned a lot about bullying, about predators, which are obviously, you know, very real and very concerning. But I think they also need to pay a little bit closer attention to just a basic question of how are my kids learning about the world and learning about their surroundings and everything around them? And the answer for most of them is TikTok Reels.
Right. So there's several questions that came up. Is one is, you know, the fact that you say the children don't feel heard or that the parents, you know, aren't aware of what's going on. So for one, like, how can we bridge that gap, right? So should we be asking parents to just get involved and get on Snapchat and follow their children, which you and I know they will probably have a different account that they let you follow, but you know, so how do we kind of close that gap of communication? And then the other question, really, what you brought up, which I think is really important and kind of detrimental, is how do we help our children be critical thinkers of this information that they are, you know, gathering and following? And, you know, like you say, these influencers that are, you know, just getting paid because they're influencers and not really knowledgeable people. So how do we help our children discern that the information is valid or not?
That's a brilliant question. And it's something that applies to adults as well. It's very difficult for an adult to, you know, understand if this influencer is real, what's going on. My answer to that, I think, would depend on the age. It's actually much easier if we start at an early age. So my kids, fourth and first, we have those conversations weekly, if not nightly, where we're looking at different examples and we're talking about it and we're educating them on, you know, how deep fakes work and how influencers can completely skew credibility. But that doesn't mean that all of them are not credible. And so, you know, teaching at a young age how to look through that. California recently passed an initiative where all schools are now mandated to teach how to spot deep fakes. And I don't know how they're going to execute that and how effective it's going to be. It's new as of a couple months ago. But that's interesting. And I think eventually, you know, if we fast forward 5, 10, 15 years, it should be something at a very young age that we have in our curriculum, how to be wiser digital citizens. How do we protect our online privacy better? How do we understand online data? How do we decipher deepfakes? How do we really act critically with who we're watching and who we're getting information from? I think it has to start at a young age. I think the second thing is creating that safe space. And this is also something that's more challenging to do later. You know, if you pick up a junior in high school and all of a sudden you're flipping on the parent switch to create this safe space and this open communication, that could be done much easier if you start building that foundation at a young age. So my message would be, if anyone's listening and you have elementary school kids or middle school kids, start now. Even if you have not even in elementary school yet, start having those conversations and creating that open dialogue, because that's going to pay massive dividends long term. Now, if you have a high school student and you haven't done that yet, for whatever reason, this is all new, I think you need to start just making your child aware that you're available and that you're not going to penalize them. Because most kids, they're going to not feel comfortable going to their parent and complaining about something on TikTok because they're afraid their parents are going to shut off their whole source of social connection. And so I think setting that tone and leading by example where they feel comfortable talking to you, because at the end of the day, that's one of the most important things we feel, is that a child feels safe and feels comfortable talking to their parent about something and asking questions without being reprimanded or losing their technology or their access.
Yes, beautiful. And I appreciate how you say to start early. And, you know, I would say as a newborn, right? It's for me, I work a lot with newborns through the first 6 years. And it's really about creating that secure attachment from the beginning so that children feel safe to be able to share, you know, whatever is coming up, whether it's digital or not, from an early age. And for me, it's interesting because it's also kind of creating new ways, I guess, of communicating with our children, right? It's new ways of saying, oh, show me what you saw today, or what's your favorite reel, or like we have to start having that lingo of, you know, what's on Instagram. I'm not a TikTok person, so I don't know the lingo of TikTok, but Instagram and such is so important to them, right? So to understand what's important to them.
Well, yeah, to piggyback on that, one thing that we talk about in our house is, you know, appropriate use. And what you just mentioned, starting at a young age, I think the other side of that coin is you have to model the behavior yourself. So it's one thing to tell your kids, you know what, we need to have balance with tech and not be addicted. But then if you just turn around and you're constantly on your phone and ignoring them and on your phone at the dinner table, like that doesn't work. So I think most parents, that's a huge eye opener for them when they realize that they're one of the culprits in what's impacting their kids' view of the world and technology.
Definitely, definitely. Do you have digital rules in your home? What would those be?
Yeah, we do. And, you know, we try to stay nimble because it's, you know, there's going to be days that it doesn't work. So, I mean, basic stuff, no phones in the bedroom, no phones at the dinner table. You know, when we're present with each other, we're present with each other, right? In terms of screen time, you know, we love family movie night. We watch movies together. It's fun. The kids, they'll play some Mario Kart. That's okay. You know, and a lot of times, you know, that used to be the big question, how much screen time is okay? And that's transition. That's actually not a great question anymore. The better question is what's the portfolio personally for that child? So if you have child A that isn't connected socially, isn't meeting their academic responsibilities, isn't active, and ultimately is just kind of held back, the answer is probably zero, right? But if you have a child that's, you know, very active, they're on top of their homework, they're meeting their expectations socially and academically and coming home from sports, they need some of that downtime. That actually could be, Dr. Hughes on our team, a psychiatrist here in Portland, he talks about how sometimes that downtime and that boredom and that doing nothing is healthy for the brain, but it all depends and it's very specific on the child. So in our household, yeah, we're kind of flexible on screen time. We don't have a specific rule of X minutes or X hours a day. It's, you know, it's fluid with the week, just depending on what's going on, how we're doing. And the more important thing, though, is we have those conversations about why we're not getting addicted and spending too much time on screens. We have those conversations about Instagram and Instagram Reels, where there can be a good time for it. And it might be an entertainment source, but it's not something that should be a constant entertainment source. And it's also something we need to be very careful for with what we're looking and what content we're consuming.
Right, right. And I like your those initial rules that you said about no phone in the bedroom or at the dining room table, which I think is so, so important. It's, both of those are critical. Now, I know, Forrest, you mentioned early on some of the more negative kind of, you know, aspects of the digital world for our youngsters, mostly middle school, high school. Would you mind touching on some of those?
Yeah, no, and it could start earlier. So I think one challenge, well, I mean, it could start very, very early. So under age of two, and this, I think a report just came out last week, and I don't have the data memorized on this one, so I can't speak on it, but under the age of two, excessive screen time neurologically can really mess with development. We'll just sum it up to that. After that, you know, it's complicated, right? And so, you know, if you have a lot of kids playing Roblox and Minecraft, and, you know, on the surface, those are fairly innocent games. They're open networks, though, especially Roblox, where, you know, you could be chatting. There's actually a lot of bullying going on in first and second grade on Roblox, right? With strangers and with your own friends. So that's an example of, you know, needing to kind of teach communication and digital communication. That's something that we don't teach in schools. And then a lot of parents think, okay, we're going to just introduce text messaging and not give them access to social media so they could stay connected with their friends. Well, that could be really dangerous as well, because, you know, a child doesn't know how, I mean, adults sometimes don't know how to interpret a text message, right? You know, it's a short form of communication with no emotion. And so, you know, we have parents calling with their kids crying at night because someone was just slightly short in a text message. Well, that's what a text message is. So I think a lot of parents, they need to focus more, and eventually schools, focus more on, you know, appropriate and tactful communication, both outward and interpretation of simple things as text messages. In terms of another thing with younger age, and this is one that we don't have a ton of data on, but we have some hypotheses, and that's with learning apps and ed tech, right? You know, so it's most school districts have completely adopted very heavy tech within the school system. And in some cases, that's good and it's efficient. In other cases, for example, math learning apps, we're starting to see some data come out that it's actually counterproductive and you don't learn nearly as much with a math learning app as you would with analog math lessons. And you learn how to do different things, how to gamify it, how to win tokens, and how to, you know, have, you know, these different elements, you know, satisfy dopamine, but you're not actually learning fundamental math. And I have a good personal example on that. My son, we were getting out to do flashcards. This is late last year. And he said, "Oh my goodness, flashcards are so boring." And I said, "Okay, what would you rather do?" He said, "I'd rather do, you know, a learning app because it's just so much more fun and it's gamified." I said, "Okay, but do you feel that you learn on the gaming app?" He said, "Well, no, I don't learn on it, but it's a lot more fun," right? So, and we're starting, so that was case closed there. We moved away from learning apps. That's specific for my household. But there's a lot of challenges and a lot that we don't know yet about the effectiveness of learning apps. Once you get into middle school, it's complicated, and this is going to depend on the community. But social media, there hasn't been one study showing a positive benefit of social media prior to high school. Not one, right? And there can be some very niche cases there, but for the most part, there's just not one. Like, it's introducing distraction. It's introducing this platform for bullying. Bullying stats are just sky highs in history. It's absolutely scary how much it's impacting kids. So, you know, we're pretty strong as a company with Camplight that, you know, as a community, we encourage communities to be pretty hard on no social media without proper training. Wait as long as possible. All the data is pointing to that. A phone, that's a different thing. It depends what you're doing on the phone. But in terms of social media, active social media, having a TikTok account, having a Snapchat account, there's a lot of ways around it. And that's what's causing a lot of harm. Once you get into, you know, other areas of ChatGPT and AI, you know, that's just going to depend on how they're using it. We feel that there's some brilliant uses of ChatGPT and AI for students, and we should be encouraging those and teaching them how to do those in productive ways. But of course, like anything, it could be taken out of hand and they ultimately, you know, have a detriment in what they're learning and how they're leveraging that tech.
Right, right. And when you say, you know, the whole social media to wait as long as possible, are the students themselves, like are the adolescents aware themselves of the harm that it is doing to them? Like are they also voicing that it's doesn't make them feel good?
Smart question. So for ones that don't have it yet, not really, right? Because they haven't experienced it. So if you look at a sixth, seventh, eighth grader, they want it, especially if they have some friends on it. If their friends are on Snapchat and they're not commuting on Snapchat, they're out of the social circle. And that's a very painful feeling. Once you get to high school, and I'm glad you asked that question. So a lot of our data shows with, you know, our student DORA across the country, most students, there's over 70%, recognize that it's having a negative impact on their mental health, to the point that they said, many students say they wish their parents would have waited longer. It's at a point, though, that they can't really turn back, or it's very difficult for them to turn back. You know, they're so addicted, it's so ingrained in their social fiber that it's hard to backtrack, but for the most part, at least our data shows that they recognize this is impacting me negatively. I don't like how I feel, and I wish that I never had it.
Right. And it sounds like now we need to create kind of support for those children who realize the impact on how to, I guess, quit that addiction. Because I mean, when you say addiction, it really is an addiction, and how to help them just navigate away from it and reconnect in different ways. And any thoughts there?
Yeah, it's complicated. Yeah. And there's some movements around the country, flip phone movements, where high schoolers are opting in to turn in their smartphone for a flip phone. That's very interesting. There's some communities that are experimenting with landlines where, you know, children could actually talk on the phone. You remember that? Yeah. What's funny though, and we tell this to parents a lot. So when I grew up, you know, I had a landline and I would talk for hours to whether it was a girlfriend or friend. And, you know, parents would always complain, oh my goodness, my kids spend so much time talking on the phone. And be careful what you wish for, because now parents would, you know, give a left arm if their kid would actually spend 2 hours on the weekend talking on the phone to a friend, right? So that's another thing that, again, like we don't know what the future holds. Right now, social media, very scary on how it impacts. We don't know what's next though. I wish that we had a better infrastructure for teaching appropriate uses of social media, right? And it's not in the education system. Most parents aren't equipped to do that. And we're just not at that place yet. But eventually that could be interesting where it's like, okay, it's not that all social media is bad. There could be some cool, fun uses of social media in moderation. But we're not taught that. Kids aren't taught that. Adults aren't even taught that. And so we can't expect, you know, our kids to be taught that. Another interesting thing, I think, with, you know, parents and expectations, a lot of parents have this expectation that, you know, their child will self-regulate, and then they get so frustrated when they spend too much screen time. But that's medically, it's just not really possible. Your prefrontal cortex isn't fully developed till you're, you know, in your early 20s. And so you don't have the capacity to completely self-regulate your own screen time and your own dependency on tech. So it's really kind of falls to the parent of, you know, stepping in and, you know, laying a good groundwork and a framework for keeping everyone healthy as possible.
Right. No, and it's so true. Like that addiction is real. I know for myself, and, you know, I'm a mature woman, I go on digital detox where I delete all of the social media apps off of my phone for, you know, for weeks, or I've done it for months. And that's my only way to be sure that I'm not going to just pick up my phone and scroll. So it's real for everybody.
It's very real. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wonderful. Well, this has been delightful. I do have one curiosity. You mentioned several times DORIS score. What exactly is that?
Yeah, so DORIS score we developed first for adults. That's on our parent company, Digital Detox, so digitaldetox.com/score. And it's an assessment for adults that kind of determines how much tech's impacting your life. And it's fascinating. There's a lot of quizzes out there, but this was developed by some of the top mental health professionals in the country. And we spent months qualifying the data. And it's a very mathematical score. It only takes 5 minutes. It's very quick. And the questions are pretty eye-opening that'll probably make you realize some habits that you're implementing. And it's a score of 0 to 120 with 5 different risk levels. We then launched Student DORA, and that's not available to the public. It has to be administered through a school. So we have control of knowing exactly who's taking it. And that's a modified version of DORA specific for students in middle school and high school.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, I think I will be. I'm intrigued. I want to take it. So I will do that. Thank you. This has been wonderful, Forrest. And I always love to circle back to a more personal question, if I may.
Sure.
You mentioned you have a fourth grader, so a 10-year-old?
He's 9 and a half, yeah.
9 and a half. So if you were to go back maybe 11 years ago when you were expecting your first child, what wise words would you tell yourself knowing all that you know today?
So that's a great question. I was in a very different career position back then, but what I would have said is, try as much as possible to just put the darn phone down during those first few years and actually spend time, right? Like the phone can wait, work can wait. At the end of the day, there's nothing more important than your child that's going to come through your phone. So I was probably guilty of that in the first couple of years that he was alive, of spending a little bit too much time on my phone. I think part of it's under the, you know, premise of, you know, they're so young, they're not really as connected, but it starts at a very early age modeling that behavior. I think fortunately I caught that very early on and then very much changed my habits. But that's what I would have told myself. Look, like it goes by so fast. You don't want to miss those magical years checking a notification.
Thank you for that. So, so important. Thank you. Any parting words that you would like to leave our listeners with today?
You know, I would say, you know, we discussed a lot of areas, you know, that parents are maybe kind of doing things wrong. And I want to make sure we're not shaming parents. Parenting's tough, you know, and parenting technology is tough too. So my recommendation to parents, you know, don't be so hard on yourselves. You know, at the end of the day, do what's best for you and your family. Try to reduce stress. And just know that you're not alone. Every parent, this is like the number two issue facing them at all ages. So you're not alone. There's other parents in your shoes that know what you're going through. And all you could do is do your best and try to learn and pivot.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And thank you, Forrest, for the amazing work that you're doing that is so, so important in today's world. Thank you.
I appreciate that. Thanks for having me today.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Art of Parenting podcast. And if you did, please share it with your loved ones and make sure to leave a review so it can get heard by many more. And remember, if you've got a question, let me know. I'm here for you. Till next time.